right now on the Daily Debrief. The cop sworn to protect and serve the students of Parkland, Florida, is under arrest due to alleged inaction during last year's deadly shooting. Also, cross-examination of the woman who admits she was the getaway driver in a love triangle murder for hire. And the defense wraps up the case and the jury deliberates in the sex crimes trial of a pro football player. The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Wednesday, June 5th.
Glad you're with us on The Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller, Stacey Delicat, Mike Korobanek's joining us. A former school resource officer stationed at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, when shots rang out last year, has been arrested and charged with a series of crimes. Scott Peterson is accused of 7 counts of neglecting a child, resulting in great bodily harm. He's also accused of 3 counts of culpable negligence and 1 count of perjury. Officials say Peterson did not react quickly enough to the shooting. Peterson said he could not tell where the shots were coming from. The Parkland shooting resulted in 17 deaths in February 2018. The commissioner of law enforcement in Florida said there was no excuse for Peterson's complete inaction. The local sheriff said he was sick to his stomach by the officer's actions. The panel is with me a little bit early tonight. So, Stacey, even President Trump was criticizing this officer. So he has a lot of weight on his shoulders and now legal liability.
That's right. President Trump called him a coward on several occasions, I believe. He didn't go in there and save those people. So there's no question there's a lot of public opinion, for sure, a lot of public opinion against him. I guess the question, though, is whether the law will end up being against him, whether this question of whether or not he can be considered a caregiver and was responsible for going in and protecting the students.
Exactly. So, Mike, that's my big question is, does a police officer generally have a duty to act in a situation like this? And, of course, the legal answer generally is no. The question is whether there's an exception here.
Well, I think they're going to argue there's an exception, but as Stacey pointed out, this is a very difficult case to get a fair and impartial jury. I mean, people are treating him like he was the shooter at this point in time. I've seen interviews with parents, and rightfully so, a lot of emotion. But this is going to be a very difficult case for the prosecution because it's not, there's no room for politics in the courtroom. And I think they're stretching a lot of statutes, and if they're going to stretch them, maybe they should stretch them to the gun manufacturers just as well.
Well, then you get into another area where we got federal liability attached to that. But okay, here, is this a politically charged prosecution? You seem to be answering that flat out yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's a shame. I think there's going to be a very interesting outcome to this trial. I think there's going to be a lot of psychological experts in this trial. And, you know, this guy has got a burden he's living with now, regardless of whether it is, because he feels responsible. He's interviewed and said he felt responsible, but he just dropped the ball.
He dropped the ball, and of course, we've got the public sentiment bubbling up against him. We know about that. So again, Stacey, if you're covering this case, you know, do you think this guy should choose to be faced by a jury, or should he just choose a bench trial where the assessment might be a little bit more neutral?
I mean, I think the bench trial for sure, because as Mike said, it's going to be pretty hard to get an impartial jury. I mean, this is a case that has been heard around the world. Forget about Broward County. And obviously, I mean, 17 lives lost. There is a lot of anger. There is a lot of pain. And I think it's going to be hard to find people to be impartial.
Mike, my big question legally, I'm going to loop back to this a little bit here and say, okay, did he have an affirmative duty to act? The general rule is no, but there are special exceptions, and that is when the government assumes care of someone. Now, if someone's in a government institution, for instance, there's definitely an assumption of care there, but a school resource officer, that might blur the line a little bit, and that might be a point that has to be litigated.
I think that blurs the line extremely. I don't think it... the law should extend there. I think in this instance, he's to do the best he can do under the circumstances. Although he's trained or whatever, he still needs to. There is room for flaws. His defense could be, I was trained, I knew what I was supposed to do. But in my point and reflection at that time, I didn't think it was the best interest. Just like anybody says, a police officer, you can't look at his actions in hindsight.
A conviction here might basically result in a legal mandate that a police officer has to charge into danger, even if they don't know where it is. And Mike, that might raise a lot of eyebrows in a lot of jurisdictions. We're going to move on, though. The defense team for actor Kevin Spacey is demanding access to a more complete set of records from an alleged victim's cell phone. Spacey appeared in court this week on a sex crimes charge on Nantucket Island, Massachusetts. The defense today asked for a full forensic image from the phone of the young man Spacey is accused of getting drunk and then fondling in a tavern. Spacey has pleaded not guilty, and his attorneys say messages which make Spacey look innocent have been deleted from the alleged victim's phone. And now to Texas, where a second person is on trial over the alleged love triangle murder-for-hire plot, which left a young dentist dead. Brenda Delgado was accused of plotting for months to kill Kendra Hatcher. Hatcher was dating Delgado's ex-boyfriend, Ricardo Paniagua. She's accused of paying trigger man Christopher Love in money and drugs to actually shoot and kill Hatcher. Getaway driver Crystal Cortez pleaded guilty and agreed to testify against Love and Delgado. Love was already convicted, you probably remember, and is on death row right now. That getaway driver, Crystal Cortez, is a star witness in this case. She was on the stand today. She said the defendant was obsessed with the victim and her new boyfriend.
She showed me pictures of Ricky and Kendra, and she was just telling me that she was envious of Kendra. She also told me that Ricky was her best friend.
Well, she had let you know that she had had a best friend. That was that an ex-boyfriend of hers?
Yes, he was also an ex-boyfriend.
Is that how she would refer to him, as her ex?
Yes.
And she was letting you know that there was an individual out there by the name of Kendra Hatcher?
Yes.
And what did she say was Kendra Hatcher's role in as far as Ricky is concerned?
I just remember seeing pictures when they were in San Francisco via social media, and that they were together.
Well, Brenda Delgado discuss Ricky and Kendra Hatcher to you?
Yes.
And what types of things was she talking about?
That she didn't like them together, that she wanted Ricky back.
And this stuff that you're saying that she saw on social media, where was she seeing that?
She had created a fake profile under the name of Stefan. And she had Kendra's page under that, and she was watching Kendra that way.
And from there, that alleged getaway driver, admitted getaway driver, I should say, explained just how the defendant wanted to kill Kendra Hatcher.
One was to inject her with heroin, another one was to inject her with a sedative, and the other was to kill her with a gun.
Now, was there discussions about trying to find someone to help y'all do this?
Yes.
Who was asking who about trying to find someone?
Brenda was asking me if I knew somebody because I came from, like, a rundown neighborhood.
You tell her that you thought you might be able to help her with that?
Yes, I did.
What steps did y'all take to try to find someone?
We would drive around. First, we would drive around and asking people if they would be able to help us with stuff. And they would say yes or no.
This testimony continued with a description of how the shooting unfolded.
Miss Kendra comes in and she parks catty corner to where we park. And Christopher Love gets off the vehicle through the driver's side in the back. And he exits the vehicle, closes the vehicle, and he approaches Kendra. And I didn't see him kill her, but I heard the shots fired. I backed out. And when I backed out, he ran into the Jeep with Kendra's belongings, her purse, and a Nikon camera.
When he comes back, he's got a purse, a camera.
Oh, and the gun.
And the gun.
Yes.
Okay. The purse, the camera, and the gun, why does he have those items?
Because Brenda wanted it to make it look like a robbery gone bad.
Wow. The defense is trying to blame the death of this dentist on this witness and the trigger man. No mastermind. That's the theory. But here, the defense presses that theory on cross-examination.
Are you telling this jury now, when I say the word cartel, you don't have any clue what is suggested by the word cartel?
I just knew it's just an organization.
Walmart is an organization.
I don't know.
But part of your whole story here is Brenda is able to do what she supposedly was able to do. That is, get a lifetime supply of drugs and lots of money and all that. Brenda was able to do that because she was connected to the cartel. That's what you've been telling people for almost 4 years, correct?
Yes.
So let's go back to square one. If the word cartel honestly has no meaning to you whatsoever, then why do you bring it up?
Because that's what she told me.
All right, why does it have any meaning to you if you don't know what cartel means?
Because that's what she told me, like I said.
And remember, they're trying to say that this was part of a cartel and that's where the drugs would come from, and that's how there was access to the drugs as payment. Let's move on to another witness now who just happened to be heading out for the night. He described what the shooting sounded like.
Went out around 7, went down into the elevators. Once I opened the door, you could just immediately hear screaming. At first, I thought it was an animal because it was just distorted a little bit. I couldn't really understand what it was, so I thought it was like a dog freaking out maybe. And then after probably 5 seconds of screaming, you just heard pop, pop. And after those pops, you hear the car door close, tires screech, and then a car coming down the ramp.
The defendant's cousin testified that it was indeed Brenda Delgado who wanted to hurt Kendra Hatcher, and that Delgado was ready to pay money.
She told me that she wanted me to just scare her, and she said she would pay me. And she never told me that she was, like, trying to hurt her, but I still told my mom because I took it as...
Again, don't tell the jury what your mom said.
Okay.
But you can tell the jury what Brenda said to you.
That she would help me, and I told her no. I wouldn't do any of that.
Did she offer you money to do these things?
Yes, sir.
And you recall how much money she offered you?
I don't remember.
I'm sorry?
I don't remember.
You don't remember she offered you money?
No, I don't remember how much the amount.
But you do remember being offered money?
Yes.
And in exchange for the money, what were you supposed to do?
Scare Kendra Hatcher.
You remember that conversation about a baseball bat?
Yes, sir.
What were you supposed to do with the baseball bat?
Like I said, scare her. I wasn't going to hurt her or do anything.
That witness seemed like he did not want to be on the stand. A friend, though, used the word obsessed to describe the defendant's thoughts toward her ex-boyfriend.
She would talk about him, his location, his emails, bank account, everything about him. She was really obsessed over him.
When you say location, what do you mean she talked about his location?
She would have a different phone, and she would basically know all his location and movement of him.
She was following him on a phone?
Yes, sir.
Were there times when she would tell you this is where he is right now?
Yes, sir. She was mad because Ricky broke up with her through an email. In my language, he didn't have the balls to tell her straight up how it was.
There you have it. Well, that same friend said the defendant asked her to help, quote, eliminate Hatcher and maybe even the ex-boyfriend.
She told me that first she wanted Ricky in a coma with the bat that is right in front of me. Also, for Kendra Hatcher, an injection needle to put it in her back of her neck. She just wanted to eliminate Kendra Hatcher or even both of them.
And in return for doing that, what were you supposed to get?
Drugs, $2,000, and a car.
Also on the stand, a law enforcement analyst examined the number of phone calls between the defendant, the trigger man, and the getaway driver.
Well, this is a link analysis chart, and it's showing inbound and outbound phone calls and text messages between parties. So this is the cell traffic, which is text messages or calls between Brenda Delgado, Crystal Cortez, and Crystal Cortez, and Christopher Love. You'll see the arrows The arrows indicate which direction the phone is calling or texting to. So you'll see Crystal Cortez is making 95 transactions between her phone and Brenda Delgado. And then you'll see 131 transactions coming between Brenda Delgado to Crystal Cortez. On the bottom, you'll see there's 46 transactions between Crystal to Christopher Love, and then 111 going between Christopher Love and Crystal Cortez.
Attorney Mike Korobanics and Law and Crime host Stacey Delicat are along with me tonight yet again. So, Stacey, you were just thinking along the lines of a defense attorney here. How does the defense attack that chart?
Well, Brenda had no direct contact with Christopher Love, according to that chart, right? So could the defense say it was Crystal Cortez who was ordering Christopher Love around and telling him what to do? He didn't. The hitman didn't even talk to the defendant.
Okay, so Mike Korobanics, that's pretty much what the defense is doing. The defense is saying it was all Cortez, it was all Love, it was all the getaway driver, it was all the trigger man. It had nothing to do with me whatsoever. I was no mastermind. Maybe I was just a friend to the person who was the getaway driver. I was talking to her. It didn't have anything to do with plotting a murder.
Listen, when you do defense work sometimes and you have with cell phone records like that, I mean, you pull into any port to get out of the storm. I think the only difficult thing is when you put all of these three people is the one who had the motivation to see her dead, whether that motivation was right or wrong, the motivation was Delgado, and that's the problem.
And other witnesses saying just that she wanted her eliminated.
But we're all sitting there shaking our heads at you, Mike. And look, the weight of the testimony is very strong for the state here. But look, we'll see how the defense theory plays along as we roll along in this case. And still ahead, here on The Debrief, we're tracking deliberations in two California cases. One involves the murder of a family. The other involves sex crimes against a former NFL player. Those are the charges. We'll take a look back at the defense closing arguments after this. We are waiting for possible verdicts in two California cases. One jury is deliberating whether Chase Merritt murdered a business associate and the business associate's entire family. A documentary film crew attached to the defense approached two alternate jurors for interviews, though, this week. The issue is that the jurors had not been officially dismissed. They're still on the hook. The judge held a hearing on the matter and is weighing his options as to whether or not more needs to be done about that matter. Jurors also deciding the fate of Kellen Winslow II, a former NFL player accused of a series of sex crimes. Five women took the stand to accuse Winslow of the crimes listed on your screen, some in multiple counts. Winslow played 10 seasons with the Cleveland Browns and other teams. During closing arguments, prosecutors emphasized the pattern in Winslow's alleged behavior. Each so-called Jane Doe had a similar story, according to the state.
Lightning certainly doesn't strike twice, let alone five times. This man took what he wanted from them and threw them aside like a piece of trash because that's what he thought that they were. Make no mistake, he has proven himself to be a sexual predator. Time and time again, motivated by his own perverse sexual pleasure to dominate and take what is not his. Ladies and gentlemen, that is his motivation, to steal their dignity, who they are, regardless of what effect that may have on them. That's what happened here. And you've heard it from the witness stand time and time again. And you've felt it in their words.
The defense asked the jury to hold the state to its burden to prove each element of each offense beyond a reasonable doubt. No blanket conviction here. That's what the state wanted. But the defense tactic required attacking the credibility of some of the accusers, including Jane Doe number one, whose daughter tried to back up her mother's story, but only after asking for money online.
Summer Foster, come on, seriously. First of all, I didn't know her mom was a victim, even though her mom said that, hey, we believe her. Her mom told her I was assaulted. But let's take that for granted. She didn't even know her mom was involved in this case. Watched her mom give the testimony that you all saw So we all know what that means. She watched the commentary from attorneys who talked about how unreliable she was and how much damage she was doing. That's the most important thing, how much damage she was doing in the prosecution case, the first witness out. And what does she do? She calls the prosecutor. The prosecutors really jump all over this. They're saying, oh, great, this is going to help us. Did it really? So Summer Foster came in here to lie, and I can tell you what her motive is. She wanted $100,000. The one that's posted up there is $50,000. She posted this before she testified. She knew, and she's watching Court TV, that it's a national audience, that people might be glued to this particular case, that might feel sorry for her mom. So what does she want to do? You know, get $100,000 out of this thing. $100,000, she'd get her mom therapy and relocation or whatever she wanted. At the end of the day, it's money. And what did she do after she testified? She went right outside and gave an interview to announce it. You are entitled to take that into account in determining the credibility of a witness. This witness is biased. She told you things that were just flat out lies.
Wow. Bottom line, we had a lot there to talk about from the defense. Law and Crime host Stacey Delacat here with me, along with attorney Mike Korobanek. So, Stacey, is the money enough to just color that entire daughter of Jane Doe number one as someone who's not credible?
Perhaps the daughter of Jane Doe number one, but not necessarily Jane Doe number one.
Well, Jane Doe number one would have been a beneficiary of the money.
She would have been, but, you know, we don't know for sure that she conspired with her daughter to create this GoFundMe page. Obviously, she would have been a beneficiary, but, you know, this is also happening after the fact. This woman, when she came forward, maybe didn't know that this would eventually go to trial and be a national, you know, have a national audience and so forth. So I would say that that is not enough, personally, to nick away at her credibility.
Maybe not. Okay. Okay, Mike, you had some issues with the way the state was framing up this case.
I thought I would have moved for a mistrial with the way the state went to the summation, because that's exactly what a jury is not supposed to do when the prosecutor said five people can't be wrong. The jury will be instructed to look at each count separately and base their findings, and if the state meets its burden on each separate count. That's exactly why, you know, and we've discussed this earlier in this case, where some people didn't think they really were able, should have proceeded with all these different counts against them because of this.
Yeah, because this is what the prosecution tries to do. They try to say, well, there's inconsistencies. Forget about those. They're probably all telling the truth. That gets dangerous. That scares me, because I know in some states they limit it much more strictly. Mike Korobanek, criminal defense attorney, Law and Crime host Stacey Delacat, appreciate the insight here on The Debrief. That's it for us on The Debrief. We'll be back with more live trial coverage in just a moment for those of you watching on the network.